Hello, and welcome to the season one premiere of Deborah Craddock. Before we jump in, I'm going to introduce myself.
She was gonna keep, oh yeah, all right. Take it easy, baby, make it last all night. She was an American girl.
This is Deborah Craddock, a podcast where we sit down with everyday Americans and hear their extraordinary stories. I'm your host, Deborah Drucker. Come along with me as we discuss those things that we were always told not to talk about: politics, religion, and more. I promise you'll be inspired and have your mind opened by the end of this episode.
Well, it was kind of cold that night. She stood alone on the balcony. Yeah, she could hear the cars roll by out on 441, like waves crashing on the beach. And for one desperate moment.
Hello, I'm Deborah Drucker. I hope you will listen to my podcast titled Deborah Craddock. On Deborah Craddock, I will be introducing you to your fellow Americans. I love to get to know people in our neighborhood, in our lives, in America, or just absolute strangers out there. There is no need to be famous because to me, everyone has a story to tell. On Deborah Craddock, I want to talk about the things we were told we are not supposed to: politics, religion, sexuality, and mostly how each guest sees our country through their own personal story. Deborah Craddock is meant to expose the good and maybe not so good qualities in all of us, the things that make each of us uniquely us. I love my country and am a patriotic American to the core. I have always believed that America is the great and wonderful melting pot. Let's get together and unify for our collective greatness. We've been divided by politics, a pandemic, vaccine mandates, social media, and emotional discourse for too long. Time to band together, because together we are stronger and divided we are weaker. I hope to make that happen even just a little bit here on Deborah Craddock. I was born on an Air Force base in Mount Clemens, Michigan, to a multi-generational Irish Catholic American father and a Moroccan Sephardic Jewish mother. My father fought in three wars for this country. My dad, James Alfred, was a staunch patriot and said he'd fight his entire life for American democracy if the military wanted him to. He later worked as an airplane mechanic for McDonnell Douglas, and when the work was scarce, he'd work his fingers to the bone at the refineries in Long Beach, California. My mother became a naturalized American citizen, a productive taxpaying and hardworking contribution to this country. She always said we live in the greatest place on earth, that there is nothing better than the USA. We have it all here, she would tell me. Never a day passed that she was not grateful for her citizenship. My mother later married a naturalized American who came here as a teenager after hiding from the Nazis in Belgium during World War II. My stepfather raised me with the full knowledge and consent of my biological father. My biological father suffered many demons and knew I'd be in better hands with Severin. He said, I will always have his blood. My adopted father went to high school in Los Angeles, but he became too ill to finish. When he recovered, a while later, he went to work. He worked from one job to the next and eventually found his calling in the fashion and jewelry business. I want to say, when he could, he gave 60 cents on every dollar to help fellow Americans in need. By the time he passed away in 2008, he had helped improve the lives of nearly 700,000 Americans. He gave them a hand up, not a hand out. I myself didn't go to college. I went to work. First as a stock and inventory girl at a local clothing store, then as a sales girl at a local jewelry store. I started working at the age of 14 during summer breaks from school, then full-time once I graduated high school. I never thought I'd struggle to make ends meet, because this is America, and I was willing to work wherever I could get a job to make my way. I later met and married my husband, an American musician and founding member of the rockabilly band Stray Cats. We have two adult kids and have been married for a long time now. We love our country and have raised our kids to love and respect our country too. We pay our taxes, we do our part to help others in need, and we stay informed, as factually informed, as we can to the state of America and the rest of the world. These past few years have affected me profoundly. Being the patriot I've always considered myself to be, I broke down to near tears while watching the insurrection on January 6, 2021. Never in my life did I think I would see such disrespect for the structure our country was built upon and a most shameful, disturbing misuse of the symbol of our country, the glorious American flag. I was taught the flag was sacred and can only be handled in a certain way, with respect and great care. The latest hateful and bigoted rhetoric is disturbing and alarming, even more so when the flame is being fanned by politicians and representatives in office that my and our collective tax dollars pay salaries for. The anger was building in me, which only became exhausting and unproductive. I started talking to and listening to people to hear their stories. I wanted to know how they felt about the things we all had been through these past few years as a country. I hope that we can find what we as Americans have in common so we can see and appreciate each other for the similarities amongst us. Our upbringings, our family structures, our love of sports, music, food, fashion, television shows, passions and aspirations. Welcome to my podcast. With love, Deborah Craddock. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Deborah Craddock. Today on Deborah Craddock, we are going to hear John's story. John Katechis is a waiter and host at a popular restaurant in New York City. Since getting to know our fellow Americans is what we do on Deborah Craddock, let's find out how John came to be the guy sitting with me today. Hello, John.
How are you? How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
So far, so good.
Why don't we start from the beginning?
Sure.
You are a New Yorker now, but yes. Where are you originally?
I was born in Greece. Came here when I was like 12 years old.
Who did you grow up with?
My two brothers.
Mom and dad?
Mom and dad, yeah.
How was that?
It was hell, but I wouldn't change a thing.
And how so was it?
I mean, it was literally a dysfunctional family, fighting all the time, but I loved it.
Were politics discussed, or did politics play a role in your home?
No, actually. Not at all.
Was your family affiliated with any political party?
Well, my father was it was like a Democrat from the beginning to the end. Let's put it that way.
I take it he's no longer with you?
No, he passed away 25 years ago, as a matter of fact.
Did your mom have any political perspective?
I thought she was towards the Republican side, to be honest with you.
And she's no longer with you?
No, she's kicking like a mule. 82, and I couldn't keep up with her this summer, you know?
God bless her. What about your brothers? Did your brothers have any opinion, or did they develop any opinion towards politics?
One is an extreme liberal. One is an extreme conservative.
Do they get along?
Yeah, but not in politics.
That's where they avoid.
That's why we do not discuss politics in family gatherings.
Okay. How did you arrive at your political perspective?
I mean, it's hard to say, to be honest with you. I like to try everything and see what's out there, basically, get a feel around. I'm neither a Republican or a Democrat. I mean, I'm truly a libertarian because I like to do things my own way.
Are you affiliated with that party then? Are you on your, when you vote, do you have, libertarian. So you're unaffiliated. You're nonpartisan.
Exactly.
All right. Was there religion in your home growing up?
Not much, to be honest with you. I mean, we're Christian Orthodox. We're supposed to be conservative, but not in my house, you know.
And so you have kids?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Are you raising them with any sort of religious background?
I mean, we go to church like once a year. Let's put it that way.
So religion doesn't necessarily inform your political perspective?
No, not at all.
Where did you grow up into the person you are sitting in front of me?
Probably on Madison Avenue.
In the business?
Yeah, yeah.
And how long have you been in that business?
More than 30 years.
That's commitment, John. When did you arrive at the person you are today?
Wow, that's a tough one.
Most impactful time that you went, this is who I am and this is who I'm going to be.
That's a tough question, to be honest with you, because you change literally every year. You're not the same person you were last year or the year before due to your experience and new ideas. And because I'm very open-minded, I like to experience new things. I always progress, basically.
So you're constantly evolving.
Exactly. I mean, the person I was 20 years ago was completely different than the person I am today.
For sure. When I ask that question, I think to myself, where did I grow up? For me, growing up being raised in one place, but I did grow up when I first came to New York with my husband. It was a different perspective than when I was a young girl coming to New York.
You see, New York, you either sink or sink, one or the other. You know what I'm saying?
Sink or sink?
Sink or sink. You go down no matter what.
Yeah, it's a tough town, but it's also a friendly town.
It is a tough town.
Don't you find it a friendly town?
It is.
In the business you're in, you interface with so many different people. Do you find New Yorkers primarily friendly or more so less friendly?
I think they're the best people on earth, the most loving people, because I like to travel. I mean, I've been literally every country in Europe, South America. I've done the East Coast, I've done the West Coast, nothing like New York. Absolutely nothing.
So, America, really?
By far.
Of all the countries you've been
to?
By far. You wouldn't change it?
I would not change a thing.
I have to agree with you.
We're the most loving people on earth.
I love our country.
The most caring people.
When you were growing up, was your mother very involved in your upbringing or was she more laid back? Tell me a little bit about your mom.
Completely laid back. Completely. Never forced me to do anything. That was my decision, and I had to live with it no matter what.
Excellent. She sounds like a nice lady, that's for sure. Who was the number one most influential person when growing up?
Wow. I'm trying to, like...
Not one stands out the most?
I think Dr. Martin Luther King, to be honest with you.
That's a good one.
I mean, he was great. No matter what, he was great. He tried to bring everybody together, not separate it as we're doing today.
It's very unfortunate, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, you know.
I hope that our country can heal.
Exactly. I mean, we need a person like him again.
We do.
You know, so maybe we can start healing again.
We need the great unifier.
That's what he was.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more. In fact, I'm hoping that Deborah Craddock reveals the humanness in all the Americans I speak to and finds a common thread amongst us, despite the differences in the political scenery.
You see, politics right now separates people instead of bringing them together.
When do you think in your lifetime politics united people?
The last politician that united people was Reagan.
Why do you feel that way?
I'll give you a good example. When you see Democrats laughing at his jokes, you know they were together, regardless.
Okay, that's fair. I wanted to ask you questions more about what you do, and because that's how we met. I walked into this restaurant.
Yep.
You're a very charismatic person. You're a curious person.
Yes, I'm very curious.
I like that. I know that you have some hobbies.
But let's start with being at a restaurant as popular as the one you work for. You must see so many types of people. Who are some, or who is one of the most interesting people you've met?
There are some supermodels that come in. What's interesting is the amount of food that she devours. She's like a stick, literally. But boy, can that girl eat.
Well, she's just lucky with her metabolism.
Oh my God.
Is she friendly?
Very, extremely.
Been coming to the restaurant for years?
Quite a few years, yeah.
Have you met any powerful, influential, famous people that have treated you poorly or treated you wonderfully? What's your overall experience?
It's funny you said that.
Rich and famous.
As of right now, I don't have a negative experience with a rich or famous person.
That's really nice to hear.
Yeah, because most likely if you're very rich, that means you're very smart. If you're very smart, it really does make sense to look down on a person, because I'm going to go write something online or something negative. That's the reason why, because I've made mistakes, don't get me wrong.
Well, you're just very likable,
you know,
as well, John, let's face it.
But so far, knock on wood. I mean, seriously.
Good. So you really enjoy the experience
yeah.
there. Well, 30 years later, you must,
yeah.
right?
I'll give you a good example. It was a gentleman, a very wealthy gentleman. I'm not going to say a name. He literally had 5 minutes to eat. No more. He comes in. He goes, listen, let me get a table. I had one small table. I gave it to him. Put the order in. He saw a little kid walking and crying. He went to the bathroom. He got lost. Inside the store, it's a lot of people. He got up, took the kid by the hand, and found the mother that was yapping away with another friend.
Sweet.
So that was his 5 minutes he wasted on finding out.
It's good people all around us.
Exactly.
Which leads me to another question. Having been a New Yorker for so many years, do you feel that the city has become less safe?
Yes, it has. Yeah.
What's your experience with that?
Basically, we no longer care about each other. And what do I mean by that? And no lady literally stumbling, falling down, and two people walk by her without helping her. I don't think it would happen a few years ago, 5 or 6 years ago.
That's interesting you said that. About 5 years ago, I fell down on Madison, and I had a group of people trying to help me.
Now that doesn't happen.
But you still feel we have more good people
yes.
than not.
Oh, yes.
I know that we've had conversations and you've mentioned to me that you are pro-gun.
Oh, yes.
And your Second Amendment right to bear
oh,
arms.
Oh, yes.
What mainly do you have your guns for?
I used to hunt, to be honest with you, but I no longer enjoy it. Now, I hate to say it, it's for protection.
Okay. Yeah. Have you ever had the need to have your gun by your side for safety reasons? Or?
No, not at all.
So you're pretty safe where you are in the Bronx, or you feel good about it?
Yeah.
Do you think that this increase in crime or danger here in the city is more impacted in the neighborhood where you are?
Oh, no, not at all. I live in a small neighborhood right by the water, private houses, one way in, one way out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not that many streets going to that neighborhood.
Where do you think this increase in crime is taking place? Is it just throughout the city or throughout the borough?
Unfortunately, in low-income neighborhoods.
So do you not believe that there's more job opportunities now than there have been in the last few years?
There are probably more now, but people are not willing to work.
Do you think that's a byproduct of the lockdown?
Yeah.
Or?
Oh, yeah.
How so?
People got comfortable not working. And then you have incentives. Oh, you can't find a job. You go on government support, and that's it.
Do you disagree with that sponsorship, that there was some support out there for people who... we're missing work.
Yeah, a lot of people that actually need it.
True. Okay.
You know, it's like...
That's fair. I have a question about your Second Amendment right.
Sure.
Is there a limit to the weapons that you feel people have a right to possess?
What do you mean by limit? The number or the type?
Good question. I think both.
Okay.
The amount, and would you be okay with someone having a missile launcher?
Okay. A missile launcher is not a it's not a weapon of choice. It's useless. The amount of guns, there should be any limit if you're a collector. Can somebody tell you how many guns you should collect and limit you? I don't think that's fair. Now, to the kind of guns, as of right now, it is a federal law against owning any type of automatic weapon. Not semi-automatic. Big difference. So basically, I think the law became in effect in the 30s. No fully automatic. So basically, nobody in the United States can actually possess a fully automatic weapon. They can possess a semi-automatic.
And what is the need in your mind for a semi-automatic?
Quite good question. An AR-15 is useless for hunting. I mean, you could use it, let's be honest. It's not a weapon of choice for hunting. It's basically a military weapon. And now you can ask me, why do we need a military-style weapon?
If you're not in the military,
if you're not in the military. And that's a very good question. The answer to the question is this, basically, that all guns were created for one reason, and that is to
kill.
That's the only reason, either in self-defense or offense. The only way to defend yourself against an offensive weapon is with the same weapon in a defensive manner. So basically what I'm telling you is the AR-15, you know, the semi-automatic military-style weapon, the reason why we have it, just in case our government gets out of hand.
Okay. Well.
I mean, you take history.
When you see what's going on in these school shootings and these kids getting their hands on this and they can wipe out so many children at once, does that give you pause to
It does. To it does. It does. It does. I mean, I have to be honest with you.
And how do you feel about just better background check or some sort of regulation so that these weapons don't fall into the wrong hands?
That's not going to happen. And what I mean by that, background checks mean nothing. Okay, I could be the craziest person on earth. If you don't have any type of record of me, then I can pass any type of background check. Am I right?
It's true.
Okay.
But we know you're not a criminal.
Yes.
We know that you haven't used it before. I think it's a difficult time when young people are going into schools and assassinating all these children. It's hard to say, for me anyway, that there's a purpose for those weapons, besides the military or the PD.
Well, I don't think the PD should have the police department. Should have those type of
weapons.
Maybe
the SWAT team.
The problem with the police in the 70s and 80s, it was a civilian force. 90s, it became a paramilitary force. I mean, we see that on the news every day. I mean, you go like that to a cop and they beat the shit out of you.
Yeah.
I mean, we see that every day.
Do you feel that there should be some sort of higher bar, not necessarily defunding the police, but perhaps increasing funding to the police for a higher standard of policemen?
The problem with police right now is that the standards are so low to become a cop.
That's what I'm saying. Should we raise the bar?
Educate them more, and have a federal observatory. Basically, if you killed somebody, don't let your own department decide if you did something wrong. let the federal agency be responsible. Because your department, 99.9% of the time, they're going to find you, oh, you didn't do nothing.
When you say federal agency, how do you feel about these threats and attacks on the FBI right now?
I don't like it at all, to be honest with you.
Do you feel it's unwarranted?
It is unwarranted. Of course, most people are honorable people working for the FBI. Again, you're going to have one person or five or whatever that are idiots. You cannot blame a whole system or a whole department because of a few bad apples.
True. Okay.
And that's what we do all the time. You know, something goes wrong with like NYPD and then all the cops get to blame. You can't do that.
Do you still feel there are more good altruistic police in the force than bad?
Yeah.
Even though you're seeing more
yeah.
daily struggles with the police. And do you think maybe therapy or more emotional support should be implemented with the police departments?
Emotional support doesn't really work. If a guy has a gun and he's trying to kill people, there's, you know what I mean?
Right. Unfortunately, there's more guns in this country, I think, than there are people.
Yes, they are. Correct.
It's one thing to be a collector. I'm not going to state my opinion. I do believe in the right to bear arms. I also believe that, and maybe I will state my opinion, I also believe that when the amendment was written, that they were using muskets.
Yes, they were. Actually.
And it took a little bit longer to reload that musket.
Yes, but a minute. By the way, just want to mention one thing. I don't have a single gun in my house. When my son was born, all my guns went up to my brother's house.
So you're all about safety?
Of course.
Clearly, gun
yeah.
safety.
Yeah, of course. Unless he learns how to use it properly, I'm not giving a gun to a 13-year-old.
Excellent. You know? Well, that's really good news.
You know what I mean? So, let's be honest. You know?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your honesty. I appreciate getting to know you. I hope our listeners are as thrilled as I am that you came to sit with us and speak to us today.
My pleasure, Deborah. My pleasure.
I really appreciate it. And thank you so much. Is there any charity or cause or anything you'd like to throw out to our listeners while we're together today?
Not really, no.
No.
You know why? Because if I miss somebody, then they're going to say, oh, you didn't say this, or you didn't say that. You know?
Good point. And one last closing question.
Sure.
Do you feel that the right to vote is a privilege?
It should not be a privilege. It should be a right.
It is the right to vote, but do you hold it in high esteem? Is it something that you do with every election?
Yes, I do.
Well, thank you for that. We want to make sure everybody gets out.
Just for the record, I voted for Johnson in 2016.
There you go.
The pothead.
We got John. He voted for Johnson. All right, John, thank you so much. Look forward to seeing you again.
Beautiful.
This episode of Deborah Craddock was hosted by me, Deborah Drucker. It was edited by Juan Sanson and produced by Lee Rocker and Chloe Casson.
Well, she was
our amazing music
girl.
Was performed by Amy Nelson and Kathy Guthrie of Folk Uke. Be sure to rate and review this episode wherever you listen to podcasts. For more Deborah Craddock, check out DeborahCraddock.com and our Instagram at Deborah Craddock. That's D-E-B-O-R-A-H Craddock, like Democratic. Until next time.
Political is personal, so